Let's try to remember that even though the players in particular roles might appear to be unwise or even stupid or dangerous or unsavory, that the person playing those roles is pure wisdom. There's nothing here but wisdom. So our job, when we have large-scale events like this, which seem to be tragedies, our job is to not just think about what the wisdom is, but feel it in our bodies and in our emotions and in what realizations come to us or what insights come to us. One of the main methods in this tradition is the use of shock. So you could say, in a sense, that God just played the part of a crazy wisdom guru and gave us a big shock. What happens when we feel shock? It clears out our stale ways of experiencing things and opens the way for wisdom to find a place to make itself known. If we're too distracted and engaged with our habitual patterns of body, energy, and mind, and of thoughts, we become like a wall. Wisdom can't get in. Fresh wisdom can't get in. Sometimes wisdom is in the form of something that is creative and new, that builds something, that causes something to appear. A new form, a new configuration, a new circumstance that feels creative, like something has been added to our lives. Sometimes wisdom appears in that form. Other times wisdom appears in a form that helps us to maintain our lives, to have continuity, to have routine, to keep something going. And many, 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 many times wisdom appears in a destructive form. And in fact, those are often the times of biggest growth. And even though they're upsetting and destabilizing, destruction is really at the essence of spiritual practice. Destroying old ways of thinking, old ways of feeling, old ways of being. Destroying old, outdated forms that are no longer useful. Or simply destroying so that we can experience impermanence. Now, most of us have contemplated impermanence, whether it's through the changing of the seasons or people being born and dying or aging or jobs coming and going or, you know, relationships, whatever form of impermanence, there's many, many forms of impermanence that we've all encountered. But then, inevitably in a human life, we encounter some form of impermanence that really we wish, oh, no, that's enough. That's too much impermanence. And right now, we're confronted with the possibility of very large-scale destruction. I mean, we don't know that's going to happen, but certainly that's in everybody's mind. Who's going to die as a result of someone who is tyrannical and sociopathic, who has their finger on the nuclear button? What's going to be destroyed as a result of someone having so much power who would rather corporatists make money than protect our environment? It's not that he doesn't believe in global warming, it's inconvenient. It's an inconvenient truth. I think however way that we're relating to this, we're all relating to it on some level as, oh no, how much destruction is going to happen? How much suffering is going to happen? And in that sense of shock, we get to feel the edges of our own attachments to how things are, to things lasting, to things improving, to things progressing. Because certainly we have attachments to those, right? To the world being a certain way. We have lots of attachments to those, which when we're going along with a relatively low dose of impermanence happening in our lives, we can fool ourselves into thinking that we can handle a lot more than we really can. So these kinds of big shocks, and I would say even big disappointments, right? Or I would even say something we would call in a relative sense a tragedy. These are things that show us our real condition. That is part of, and in fact, one of the major ways that wisdom arrives through a destructive process. And it strips away fantasy about who we are, what condition we're in, what condition our fellow human beings are in. And we can't proceed in the best possible way without having that fantasy stripped from us. When we are still in a state of fantasy, we are unskillful, or not as skillful as we might be. So this is one way that destruction and upsetness and disappointment and fear on this kind of a scale can help us spiritually. Right? This is absolutely a time of incredible potential. I'm not saying, and so let's everybody be happy. Not at all, right? I mean, I know all this from my own experience as a practitioner. I still feel my heart is feeling for all the people that are suffering and that might suffer in the future, right? And animals and everything else around here on this planet. The other thing that's a little more closer to home with our own culture here in the U.S. is that Trump is a titan. When you experience him, you are experiencing an asura of the nth degree. Asura is the Sanskrit word for titan. A titan is a kind of karmic vision and a form of experiencing body, energy, and mind that's in between humans and gods. We could think of that literally or in a metaphorical sense. It doesn't really matter. But there's this tremendous desire to compete with the gods and become number one, like an unrelenting desire to beat out all the competition. And then tremendous self-doubt, tremendous uncertainty and fragility. And so dealing with that by stepping on the people below you. So there's someone who's tremendously fragile, tremendously competitive to an absurd degree, and tremendously divisive, argumentative, defensive, vigilant, restless. How can we antidote this? By looking at him and finding him in ourselves and being determined to let go of those forms of life in ourselves, because we all have them to some degree. This is a titan realm culture. We are all competitive to some degree. We are all divisive to some degree. We are all argumentative to some degree. We are all trying to beat somebody out and step on somebody else to some degree or another. I have never met anyone who grew up here who did not have some of this kind of pattern. We're like the giant pimple of Titan realm, and he's like the pus that just squirted out of the center. He came from us, right? And he's like this huge mirror of our culture and us. Why is he misogynistic? It's because he has to find someone he deems weaker to control. So find that in yourself and eradicate it. Every single time from now on that you treat anybody as lesser than, in order to make yourself feel more secure. I just want you to think of Trump, because you're being him when you do that. Every time you would do anything to be right, anytime you feel that you have to be right in order to avoid humiliation, I want you to think of Donald Trump, because you're being him. You're being a version of him. The only way to get rid of Donald Trump is to get rid of Donald Trump in you. Make no mistake about it, we produced him. Every time you lash out at people you think are attacking you, even just in your mind, every time you get into that position where you feel attacked and you want to just like smash the other person somehow or another, I want you to think of Donald Trump, because you're being him. And you're allowing that to persist for everyone, not just for you. I know that each of us is going to have our own way of participating in this moment in human history. And I have no prescription as to what form your participation should take. That's something that everyone has to feel and decide for themselves. However, you should not abandon your attention to what's going on with you and your own spiritual life and distract yourself with outrage and depression and overactivity. So whatever you do should come from the center, because that's the only way you won't be perpetuating Donald Trump. If you're coming from a place of, I'm going to get this fucker, right? Or I'm going to save the world, or this place of anger and outrage, or hyperbolic emoting, you won't be as skillful and you'll be perpetuating exactly what produced him. So whatever you do, you want to try to come from the center. Come from your place of essential goodness. Come from your practice. I did a divination this afternoon. Divination is a way of consulting wisdom. There's really innumerable methods in every culture, but I use a form of the I Ching. So I want to talk to you about this divination. I just asked, how should we proceed? The I Ching is organized into 6-line diagrams called hexagrams. So I'm going to be using the word hexagram when I talk about this. The first hexagram has to do with when you're in a situation where you don't have enough force to go aggressively and change something. So where you're gathering strength, or it's time to sit something out, or to take small steps. So the hexagram that I got is minor force. And that means you can take small steps, or you can, in a sense, sit it out. Like, have you ever like been in the ocean when a giant wave comes and you have to kind of duck under and swim under it? Something like that. Or take a time out. Or just wait and gather more force, more power. So the actual specific advice is this. Return to one's Tao, to one's own nature. So this is this idea of going back to the center. Even though we're all, or I think everyone is upset, at least everyone was disturbed or shocked. And there's a tendency then to just kind of spin out from the center and lose touch with the center, lose touch with your practice, lose touch with your sense of value and goodness, and just feel all anxious and, you know, go sputtering along. But this says, return to one's Tao, to one's own nature, to peace and harmony within. And then it says, be loyal to the Tao. Be loyal to your essence nature. Don't turn in a different direction. And then it says, let go. Let go of the need to control circumstances. I thought that was really beautiful advice. So that means for me personally, and there's more to it, I'm gonna keep talking about it for a minute. There's another hexagram involved. So for me personally, I have actually gotten more involved politically than I've been in decades during this election. And I really feel like it's time for me to withdraw and just tend to my flock and do what I came here to do. That's my own way of returning to the Tao. That's what I feel is right for me. But that doesn't mean that that's what you have to do, you can be more participatory in an external way and still return to your Tao. I mean, in a practical sense, that means continuing to do your practice every day and continuing to try to connect with presence in every moment and integrate your practice into whatever you're doing, no matter how external or participatory it is, and to not get swept away by the strong forces of the moment, because they're very strong. And the sense that there's some kind of emergency that requires you to drop everything and disconnect from your practice or what you've been cultivating all this time. And then it gets even more specific. The hexagram that it turns into is a hexagram that is, there's a strong force, do not marry yourself to it. And I'm going to read directly from the divinatory text. This hexagram is derived from the image of locked horns, a battle of wills. It describes an encounter and or an entanglement with a debilitating force that is strong and yet subordinate. So this is actually such a great example of a titan. You know, someone who is really actually weak but appears very strong or feels very strong. It is about being tested by seduction. And I think here the seduction is to get wrapped up in this drama of fighting something in the righteous fight and lose touch with your essence, lose touch with what you're really here to do, whatever that might be for you. This is a time to withdraw and cut your losses. Everyone is at risk to be abused by the inappropriateness of a relationship. Think rot and ruin. A kind of corruption has entered into the very foundation of things. Good for withdrawal, divorce, restraint, self-cultivation, and retreat. How does weakness become a great force? This hexagram represents those who use weakness, disadvantage, or triviality to manipulate the powerful and or steal their power. Such people can cause great humiliation. A wise person with the responsibilities of leadership does not indulge in the trivial. Resistance to seduction, even if it causes a temporary embarrassment, is recommended. Of course, the embarrassment could be, you know, where's your outrage? I mean, what's happening now is completely normal. It's just a big event in our human lives. It's a big event in human history. It might be a defining event for the planet. We don't know. But as I've said many times, whole universes wink in and out of existence. This is not abnormal. This is the norm, right? Destruction doesn't happen because some bearded white guy comes down from heaven and throws a thunderbolt at someone or a planet. We are the arms and legs of destruction. We are the arms and legs of God, right? And of creation and maintenance too. I mean, we're doing that. We are the expressions of that consciousness, that ubiquitous consciousness. So everything that's happening here is still that, and there's nothing unusual about it. But we should all respond in a way that's natural to us, right, while keeping to that center, as, you know, like white on rice, as they say. I want to read something else to you that came across my computer today. That was really beautiful. This is a Hopi teaching. Maybe some of you have heard it. Here is a river flowing now very fast. It is so great and swift that there are those who will be afraid and who will try to hold on to the shore. They are being torn apart and will suffer greatly. Know that the river has its destination. The elders say we must let go of the shore, push off into the middle of the river, and keep our heads above water. And I say, see who is there with you and celebrate. That's so beautiful. At this time in history, we are to take nothing personally, least of all ourselves. For the moment we do, our spiritual growth and journey come to a halt. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your attitude and vocabulary. All that we do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. For we are the ones that we have been waiting for. What does that mean? We are the ones. We are not waiting for something in the distant future, for some other people or other circumstance. We already have everything we need. We are the ones that we have been waiting for. So it's good to have community, as many people have been remarking today. It's good to have people who share in similar values and share this path together. And it's good to be gathered with everyone and not be a lone wolf and not feel separate, because it's that experience of extreme separation that has created this situation. From my own perspective, and again, I'm not trying to talk anyone into anything, but from my own perspective, there is no better political work that you can do than wake up. Because being more awake, and I think there are many people who are becoming more awake, and I think, you know, as I've been saying since the beginning of this election cycle, I'm just really heartened by the heartfulness of the so-called millennial generation. And I think they really are something special and different than what we've experienced in modern history. Once you are more awake, you can be so much more skillful. You can be so much more effective. You can be so much more compassionate. You can take actions that don't just repeat the patterns of the past in a different form. Because that's what we've often seen. You know, one generation replaces another one and just does all the same old stuff. Even though it looks a little different, it's not really all that different. But when you come from the heart, when you come from your center, that's different. So I think that's what we should all do. And gather together as much as possible. I'm going to stop there.